Welcome to the MacGuffin Men.
This episode is brought to you by American Flags in Movies. We don't need the wind to wave. We just need to be looked at by a true patriot.
And now, here are Alex and James.
Welcome to the MacGuffin Men. I'm Alex. With me is James.
That's me.
That is you. We're going into part two of our sports podcast in this one. I believe we're looking at the business side of sports.
Kind of sports as a product, the business side of sports, some of the financial stuff. So instead of the stuff that the coaches and players think about so much, it's kind of more the owners, advertisers, general managers, I guess.
Yep.
All that, the financial side of it, basically.
Coaches do have to think of the financial stuff sometimes. They just hate having to.
Yeah, not nearly as much. I guess they've got to worry about how much they're spending on each player and things like that.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll touch on it at some point.
Yeah, but we'll get there.
Yeah.
I'm going to combine two of the MacGuffin Men's favorite things right now.
Okay.
With the intro and activities.
Oh, wow.
I know, right? Doubling up today.
So the intro is not my favorite part of the show ever. No. You know that, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's everyone's least favorite part.
Okay. Which is why it's good that we drag them on like this.
Yeah. Let's talk about intros for a little bit.
Let's do that. Or let's play the intro activity.
Okay. In 2006, which is the most recent year I could find these stats.
Okay.
How much money do you think Americans spent on tickets to sporting events? And don't look at my notes.
$1.2 billion.
$17 billion.
That's 17 more times than what I guessed.
Almost. Yeah. I mean, it's not just the major sports or the big four sports. I mean, we've got to look at all the farm teams for those sports, all the minor league teams, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, right? I know. That's a good point.
And as a fan of Friday Night Lights, I'm sure you know that high school football and high school sports are a pretty big deal in the States.
Yes, they... They are a business.
Yeah, very much so. And the way that you...
Not even counting, like, we didn't even mention college sports, which is huge.
Which is huge, yeah. As you know, we used to live right by the University of Western's football stadium, and it was not a very packed stadium.
Well, you know, there's a big difference between Canadian university football and American university
football. Exactly. It's not that Western is bad, but just sports at a lower level than major league sports are such a big deal in the States, and that's why they have that infrastructure where... If you do manage to become a great high school athlete in Canada, you're probably just going to get a scholarship to go somewhere in the States.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's why it's always really, like, a big deal when a person that went to Canadian, like, university makes to the NFL, because it almost never happens.
Yeah, and we just don't have that same infrastructure of, you know, sports from the ground up all the way to the pros, other than hockey, than they do in the States, right?
Exactly.
Second part of the activity, again, Americans in 2006. How much money did they spend on sporting goods, which means merchandise as well as sports equipment, things like that? Little hint, it's more than $17
billion. Yeah, $31 billion.
$90
billion. Yeah, that makes sense.
So this is just kind of, I mean, play an activity, which we all love. Everybody loves listening to and partaking in.
Yes. I'm sure they're shouting out their answers right now.
They are. We can't hear you guys.
Speak up. It's a pre-recorded medium. You have to be really loud, so loud that you can travel through time.
This is just kind of to give a scope of that sports really are a big business.
Yes.
And I mean, that's just in the States. We touched on a little bit in part one, but soccer around the world is such a huge thing. Sports really are not just a big cultural event, but really just a big business. There's just so much money involved in it.
Absolutely.
So just to get an idea of kind of where this money is going, can you just give us a bit of a sort of an idea about how a league works as a business? Like what role a team has in, I mean, as a franchise compared to maybe like a restaurant with franchises and things like that? Just to kind of get an idea of...
Well, yeah, that's kind of how it is. It's like, it's very close to say, let's say Burger King owns 31 franchises.
Yeah.
You know, replace Burger King with Roger Goodell and replace the Burger King franchises with like the Houston Texans and and Jacksonville Jaguars and teams that don't suck like the New England Patriots.
Why those two selections?
I don't know. Those might have been the two teams playing in the Hail Mary game this year. I know Jacksonville won that game. I don't remember who they were playing. Anyways, so like, and it's very much like a restaurant franchise, just on a bigger scale. Like, you have basically a board of directors for the league. Very often that's the franchise owners, and as well as the commissioner of the league. Like I said, Roger Goodell is the commissioner of the NFL. And I don't know all that much about the inner workings of that type of thing, but it's pretty simple.
Yeah, like, I mean, well,
at the base level, it's very simple.
Yeah, from, I mean, the perspective of somebody, I mean, to go with this analogy a little bit, say you wanted to open your own Burger King franchise.
Yeah.
You
have to buy in, basically.
Yeah, you approach Burger King because, I mean, they don't want you to, you know, open up a Burger King in your backyard that's, you know, dirty and not up to standards.
Right.
And it's essentially the same thing with sports, right?
Yep, absolutely.
The NFL or the NBA or the NHL, these names come with a certain cachet. And, you know, to get a piece of that, you have to have the money. You have to show a good business plan. You have to say that, you know, this is the market. This is how many people are going to come to the games. This is how we're going to set up our business. Everything like that from the second you even get considered for having a franchise. Right?
Exactly. And even with all of those things, the league has to decide if it is in their best interest to expand.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
and if they don't feel it can be supported, then, you know, you're just not going to get a team.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And so let's say your team or your franchise or something is up and running and everything, but it's failing. It might not be something wrong with the organization, but maybe just the market that you're in. And
yeah.
That's when we run into things like teams moving like that, right?
Yep.
Yeah. I guess just most recently we saw the Winnipeg Jets.
Yes.
Come back to Canada. Do you know much about Winnipeg Stadium?
It's small.
Yeah, it's really small. It's
like 10,000 or something. It's like a minor league type of stadium.
Yeah, pretty much. It's going to be the smallest, as far as seating capacity, the smallest stadium in the NHL when the Winnipeg Jets or the Winnipeg...
Yeah, we'll call them the Jets. I'm just being a dick. We'll call them the Jets.
Yeah. They kind of have an interesting setup there because people are saying, if you only have this many seats, how are you going to support, you know, an NHL team? How are you going to make the money to pay all these players? And they have a pretty unique setup because it is a stadium that they do concerts and things in all the time too, but it's also a bunch of restaurants and a bunch of shops and things like that. So even earlier in game day or when it's not even game day at all, it's still a stadium that makes money through all their other businesses.
Okay. So is it a newer stadium that's just small or?
Yeah, I think it's relatively modern.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I assume it was built for like their, because I assume they have some sort of like OHL, well, I guess not OHL, but some sort of minor hockey team that plays in it.
Yeah, and they do tons of concerts there. It's crazy. It's like the 11th busiest stadium in the world as far as how many tickets they sell throughout the year.
It's interesting.
Isn't that weird, though?
Yeah. I mean, they just work hard.
Yeah. I know. I just figured there'd be like 15 in China that beat it. Just sheer numbers, right?
It's true.
But I'm an idiot, so I'm wrong. Do you want to talk a little bit about how ownership of a team works in the major leagues like that?
Well, it varies from sport to sport, although I guess it doesn't really. Like, you can sort of, once you buy a team, you can do as much or as little as you want. I mean, you own the team, you are the boss. You can kind of, in the NBA at least, you can kind of do whatever you want as far as being racist and stuff like that and not be fired. Like, Donald Sterling, owner of the Los Angeles Clippers, is notorious, like a notoriously terrible, terrible person, and has owned the Clippers for years, and he's not going to give it up ever until he dies. Like, he's 80 something now or something. But
what do you mean he's terribly racist? I don't know anything about this guy.
He has gone into, like, he's brought people into the locker room, like in the shower room and stuff, and said, look at those beautiful black bodies and stuff like that. And it's just terrible stuff.
That's weird.
Yeah. Oh, also super weird, but, yeah, that's why the Clippers have sucked for so long, because nobody wants to play for him because he's a terrible person.
Wow.
Yeah, so Blake Griffin's going to get out of there as soon as he can once he's a free agent. Donald Sterling also heckled Baron Davis from courtside earlier this year. Baron Davis was on the team that Donald Sterling owned at the time. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So he's not a great guy.
Let's also decide to never say the term black bodies again.
Yeah, no, I wasn't happy about saying it. Then,
okay.
Yeah, what was I saying? Oh, yeah. So owners can basically do what they want. Say you've got an owner like Mark Cuban. It's very hands on. It's no secret that he's involved in approving trades, not just from a financial aspect, but from a basketball aspect. Like, he's been very hands on. Donnie Nelson is the GM of the Mavericks, or whatever they call their general manager in Dallas. But it's well known that Mark Wahlberg, or Mark Cuban.
The Funky Bunch?
Yeah, Mark Cuban and the Funky Bunch have their
still
their
opinions. The new name for the Mavericks.
Yeah. But and I mean, some owners just sort of have money and don't do anything with it, and just sort of, yeah, they really trust their front office. I mean, the Raptors have a board of directors, but they're also, I don't know if they are anymore, but for a while they were owned by the Teachers of Ontario. Yeah. So, you know, I don't think your mom was really sending notes to Brian Colangelo. I think we should draft the Solomon Abibi guy. I think we should do that.
Draft Peyton Manning. I'd love to own a sports team.
It would be fun.
Oh, it's like the ultimate sports gambling.
Well, yeah.
Just to see your team doing well would be awesome.
Yeah. I would mostly love to own a sports team just because I would be the type of rich who could own a sports team. You know, like, it's not the owning of the sports team that seems appealing to me. I feel like that would add a lot of stress to my life.
Yeah, I was going to say, I could see you stressing out hard if you own a sports team.
You've seen me react to, like, sporting events that I have no interest in other than this is the team I am cheering for.
Yeah. You know?
You've got Mark Cuban paying his players $90 million for the last year if they didn't win. You know, like, it's just like, that's $90 million. It was entertaining. It was fun, but damn it. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think you should own a sports team.
I don't want to.
Do you know about the Green Bay Packers unique ownership thing?
Yeah, aren't they owned by, like, the people of Wisconsin or something?
It's really Green Bay, yeah. It is a non-profit, community-owned team. The only major sports team to have this set up in the U.S. This happens not super frequently, but you see it often in European soccer.
Okay.
Or European football.
We'll call it soccer.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, soccer in Europe.
Yes.
Not Canadian, American soccer teams. But you do see a lot of it where basically what they do is sell shares in the team to the community, mm-hmm, for sometimes cheap, like around $100 or $150 per share. And it doesn't really come with much other than you can say you're a part owner of a sports team, which is cool. Yeah.
So you should just move to Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's what I've been dying to do that since that 70s show. So you don't get, it doesn't come with the typical benefits of ownership. Like, Mark Cuban gets a dividend check when his team makes money. They don't. You don't get free admission to the stadium or any of those awesome things. There's basically hundreds and thousands of Green Bay Packers shares out there that Green Bay cheeseheads own, and I'm sure cherish dearly.
Yeah, and I mean, Green Bay is notoriously passionate about their franchise, so I mean, that's cool.
That's the thing. It seems to really have worked for them. I mean, considering Green Bay has a population of, I think, 102,000 or something like that, that's not a very big sports market.
No.
That's usually your sports cities have millions and millions, if not almost a million people in it, right? Yep. But Green Bay has been a very successful team. They've won Super Bowls recently.
Yeah, they won the last one.
They're constantly playoff contenders. Like, they very, very rarely miss the playoffs. It's a really cool setup. Volunteers work the concession stands at the stadium.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
And usually about 60% of, like, the money you spend on a concession just gets put back into the local community. So there's just tons of charities and stuff that, you know, when you're there spending money, it's still going back into your community and to a variety of charities, which is really cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the fact that it's always volunteers working the concession stands, they manage to get, like, really cheap beer.
Yeah.
Especially relative to other sports stadiums.
Yeah, I suppose.
So I'm guessing a relatively cheap beer is like $25 or something.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
$24.75. They don't want to quite make it $25.
Yeah.
That would seem expensive.
The reason you don't really see much of this anymore is financially, I mean, people who choose to own a sports team usually do it to make money, and this really isn't a good way to make money, obviously. Yep. Also, the NFL really actually doesn't allow it anymore. There's rules made in the 80s that you can only have up to, I think, 32 people owning a team, and one of them has to have 30% of the shares. And so this is, you know, hundreds of thousands of people own this, so clearly that's a no-go. But because this team's been around since, like, 1919 or something, it got grandfathered in. And, I mean, don't fix it if it isn't broken. Things seem to be really going really well. And even outside of Green Bay, it's one of the most popular teams in the entire league.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're one of the, like, Vince Lombardi coached there, you know? And Vince Lombardi is one of the most well-known names in football of, like, football past, you know?
And one of the most famous coaches in, North American sports, right?
Absolutely.
Especially if you count out ones who are currently coaching.
Yeah, like, who even compares as a football coach to Lombardi? There was, I can't even remember his name. The Cowboys coach who coached for, like, 30 years, who always wore the hat, like, the man in the funny hat. I wish I could remember his name. Anyways, do you know Jimmy Johnson was the second Dallas Cowboys head coach of all time?
No.
And he started in 1989. I've always found that weird.
Wow.
Yeah. Tom Landry. That's it.
Yeah.
Anyways. Yeah. And they had, like, you know, they've got that whole Lombardi thing going from Green Bay does. And then starting in, like, 93 or so is when they got Brett Favre. And then, you know, I don't know what happened between Lombardi and Favre, but, you know, you've got two sports icons. So
yeah,
you're doing all right. And, like, Aaron Rodgers isn't too shabby either.
No, those are, I mean, it's too early to say about Rodgers, but those are dynasties in sports, you know, like, well, I guess Favre didn't really win enough to.
He won a Super Bowl and it was very good.
But it's a very notable era still.
Yeah.
I mean, with the Iron Man record and all
that
stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, a comparable thing is Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning's only won one time, but he has been remarkably good for a long time.
Yeah, and when you do a history of either of those teams, it will be definitely phrased as the Peyton Manning era.
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly.
Colts, or the Favre era of the Packers.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because of the Packers' unique setup, they're the only NFL team to release their financial balance sheet every year.
Okay.
Like, it's just a very transparent. I think that's such a cool setup that they have.
No, it's,
like,
it's very cool.
I can't get over it. It's definitely worth a read because it's too much to get into all the details of it now, but it's super interesting. Players' unions. That's kind of another part of the whole, the mix of this business of big sports. Usually you have, like, the National Hockey League Players Association or the NFL Players Union, things like that. And that's kind of another part of the business because sports is it is kind of a unique product that you're selling. It's tough to think of it that, yeah, it is a product, but because we engage in it in such a different way than we do with anything else, like maybe theater plays and things like that. But it's
not like I'm pouring my cereal in the morning and really cheering hard for the Crispix to come out of the
yeah, no, exactly. It's such a unique thing. So I think for that reason, we do kind of lose sight of the fact that NFL players really are just employees of, you know, this bigger company.
No,
right?
we touched on it in the first episode when we were talking about, like, home court advantage. And I mean, it's just a different kind of business trip when a team is on a road trip.
Yeah, right? Definitely. Do you want to talk a little bit about kind of just lockouts in general or some of the recent lockouts that you remember? Because we've lived through a couple. We had a baseball one.
Yes. Yeah.
Hockey.
Hockey, yeah. We're kind of basketball. Basketball 99.
Oh, yeah.
Only a half season.
Half season, yeah. And we kind of right now we're looking at possibly an NFL and NBA lockout pending a little bit.
Yeah, there's going to be a shortened season in the NFL for sure. It's so unfathomable that they would let it go to the NFL makes so much money that it's totally unfathomable that they would let it go like more than 4 weeks, I think, you know?
Yeah.
The owners will just be like, okay, fine. We have to do whatever because this money's insane that we're missing out on. The NBA is kind of really broken, which is why I'm not particularly confident that I'll get a whole season of basketball next
right.
year, you know? Because the NBA lost like $300 million last year or something.
and I mean, and think about what a big media story, like LeBron and Dallas, like so many things happened in basketball that were notable.
Exactly.
And it was still kind of a good year for them. They had a very great playoffs.
Great regular season.
A good finals. I mean, the LeBron thing, sure, it was a lot of people were mad about it, but it was a very big story and people were engaging it and watching the decision as much as they hated it and, you know, watching him play.
Yeah. And actually Bill Simmons, right before the finals ended, wrote a good piece about it and that the NBA is, as interesting as it has been debatably in 20 years. And
they're still not making money.
Yeah. And it's just, and like, it's going to go away basically. And, the reason they're not making money it's partially markets. It's also a big part of it is that owners really really are stupid in contracts that they've given out. Like Mike Conley's contract is silly. He proved to be kind of decent for the Grizzlies in the playoffs, but it's sort of like things like signing Travis Outlaw for $35 million for 4 years. Like these contracts really hold up GMs from being able to do any trades, because like that's so overpaid for Travis Outlaw.
Right.
And it was weird because everybody expected last summer, outside of the main free agents like LeBron and Bosch and Wade, everybody expected them to get their max deals. Nobody expected Joe Johnson to get 6 years at $125 million.
Yeah.
And it's just because those are the type of things that owners were like, we need to fix this. Oh crap, Joe Johnson, I need this aging 30-year-old shooting guard for 6 years.
Well, no, you don't.
And the Gilbert Arenas contract's insane. Like, he had just had two knee surgeries and you give him 6 years at $130 million. Are you kidding me?
That's the thing. If you're listening to this and you're like, I don't know who Joe Johnson is, that's kind of the point here, is that even if you're not a big basketball fan, you should know the people who are making $130 million
exactly,
because they should be so great that you just hear about them. But the point is that these mediocre or good, not great players are making absurd amounts of money, and that's where all this money's going, right?
Joe Johnson's pretty good. He's not $130 million. Like, okay. If we're talking about max deals, like LeBron took a little bit less than the max when he's playing in Miami.
Yeah.
Joe Johnson gets paid better than LeBron, you know, which is not correct if we're basing purely on skills. But and it's just on all the role players getting these big contracts. Like Chris Humphries is a free agent now who has been pretty decent on a really terrible team. If there wasn't a lockout, he would be getting paid pretty well. Like, he would say Chris Humphries had this season that he just had, and this is like a guy who was a bench player on the Raptors for years, who's now in New Jersey. He starts because I think there's nobody better on the team. He's now a free agent. Let's say that season happens last year, he gets probably like 5 years at $38 million or something. Like, it would just, you shouldn't do that for right, like an energy guy, you know. And so the big thing with the NBA lockout is owners need to find a way to have shorter max contracts, like 4 years, and smaller max contracts. So like the most they can pay a player in a season is like 18.
Right. And for, I mean, just sports in general across the board, when we get into the lockouts, it's kind of, as you said, about just kind of restructuring the league and making sure that the players and the coaches and the owners, not so much the coaches, but just the players and the owners are getting what they feel is enough money, right? That's usually what causes these lockouts.
Yes. Yeah. Kind of. The NBA and NFL situations right now are a little different because the players want more of the revenue, and the owners are asking them to work 18 games as opposed to the 16 they've been working, which
right,
is totally fucking absurd because of all the concussion and injury things that the league's been dealing with. And they're like, yeah, we're cracking down on this. No, you're not. You're trying to get them to have two more games of head injury every year.
Yeah.
And you can see with players getting more and more injured as the season goes on, nobody's at full strength at the end of the playoffs. Like, the league has gotten more and more violent, and to extend the season is totally absurd for the NFL, or any major sports, league, but,
NFL more so than, I mean, maybe NFL and hockey because of the physical nature of the game
and basketball, like all, if you cut down the NHL and the NBA to 70 games, the only people that would be really upset are the owners, because you'd have a better product because you wouldn't have to have back-to-back games, like
right,
games of back-to-back nights. So people are resting up and less injuries because, you know, just less wear and tear on your body. So it's a smart for everybody except the owners to play less games.
Right.
And yeah, so that's the big problem with the NFL, is that the players want the owners to open up their books because they know how much they know they're getting a ton of money and they're not sharing it with the players. And contracts in the NFL in general are not guaranteed. That's why you'll see giant signing bonuses in the NFL, because like say Peyton Manning signs his big contract, he had something like a $30 million signing bonus, and then maybe only like 10 to 12 a year. But the thing is that the Indianapolis Colts could cut Peyton Manning in the offseason of any year, no questions asked, and not have to pay him. And that's what, and the NFL is the sport with the shortest average career, which is like 4 years or something, if that.
Yeah.
And so these players can get cut at any time and then not have to be paid. And then it's just sort of like, that's the end of your career. good luck, you know? And the NFL has a terrible pension plan, stuff like that. The NBA, the league, has sort of dug themselves into this corner by giving out these huge contracts and stuff like that. Again, partially the market. The recession has still had some lingering effects.
Yep.
Yeah, it's basically the owners don't want to pay the players anymore, and the players are just like, come on.
Yeah. One of the tough things, I think, when you hear about these lockouts and these debates, or, I mean, these arbitrations and stuff in the news, is it always comes off as millionaires versus billionaires. I mean, these players who are already making literally millions of dollars are arguing with these, I mean, and people are mad at them for wanting more money. And kind of the other side of the coin is, well, these billionaires also want more money. These billionaire owners and things, and billionaire like corporate entities, still want more money as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, if we look at the way people talk about athletes, it's sort of like I don't know, I read something like a write-up of the playoffs where it's like, or the finals, where it's like, I'm going to pull a Dirk, which is to leave early, you know, like, which is what he did in the end of game six. He like bailed to the dressing room so no one would see him cry. And just sort of these, or I'm going to LeBron, I'm going to abandon my job and not tell anybody, you know, and just go somewhere else with my friends. We use celebrities in general, and athletes totally fall into this, as sort of cultural currency in how we discuss these people. And that's why, like, the money they earn, I think, is justified because of how much money they earn for other people. Owners, very rarely do we use the owners of these franchises as a sort of currency. Like, Al Davis is the butt of many jokes, Oakland Raiders owner. Jerry Jones gets talked a lot about. I mean, people only kind of know who Robert Kraft is because he owns the Patriots, who have been good for so long now. And I mean, can you name any other NFL owners?
No.
Yeah, like I can only name a couple more, like Jim Irsay of the Colts, and I don't know, off the top of my head, that's it. And I mean, NBA owners, I can name Jim Dolan of the Knicks, and well, I could probably name a lot of NBA owners, but I couldn't name the owner of the Heat, you know, and they were just in the finals.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we don't use these people as currency like we do the players, and so I think the players are appropriately paid. In the NFL's case, I think they're absolutely underpaid because of you know, the effect the sport has on their bodies and brains. I think the NFL players should be paid more. I think the NBA, I mean, they need to fix it just so I can get basketball next year.
Right. Yeah. I mean, when I hear about people saying athletes get paid too much, I only consider that, like, I'll only listen to the argument if they're saying that they get paid too much relative to where the money goes in the rest of the league.
Yeah.
Because it's, If these were tax dollars, yeah, you have an argument that they could get paid too much or too little or something like that, because it's your money in a way. But if it's, you know, private money, these are people who are willing to pay $100 for a ticket and $100 for a jersey and all these kinds of things. It's private money. And if your argument is that they make too much kind of compared to what a teacher makes, there's not much there for me, I'll be honest. Yeah. They've been talking about if there is an NFL lockout. You've heard about what Fox is considering doing?
Yeah, they're going to show high school football games on Friday nights.
Right? Yeah, and not just high school football games, but they're going to bring it with the Fox production values, right?
Yeah.
What do you think of that idea?
Oh, I think it's great. I'd watch it.
The thing about the NFL now, it's such a show, like, it's such a spectacle with the, like, the opening song that gets new lyrics every week.
Yeah.
Directed by, and like director of photography, like it's such an epic spectacle.
Yeah, they only do those on Monday night and Sunday night.
Yeah,
type of, like, their shows. They don't do it on like Sunday afternoon. You know, the director might get mentioned at the end of the game when like Brian Gumbel's like, and the show was produced today. Blah blah blah. I guess
one team's up 21 points.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I think it's great. And I mean, I'm not going to watch it for the show aspect. I'm going to watch it because I love watching football.
Yeah,
like. And that is why I watch football. I mean, I was a television broadcasting student, so that is interesting.
Yeah.
But I'm far more interested in the actual sport than anything. And I mean, I would love to watch some high school football. I mean, you mentioned Friday Night Lights. Big fan.
Yep. if well documented.
Yeah, exactly. if NBC starts doing this and then does some sort of like nostalgia game with the brings back the Dillon Panthers and gets Matt Saracen and Tim Riggins on the field, I'd love it. I'm really interested in high school sports just because of how they are in America and how big of a deal they are. Like, there's this documentary called Go Tigers or Go Tigers Go, which is about a high school football team in the late 90s. And it's like a small town. And just how big of a deal this team is to the town is really interesting and kind of sad. But I don't like, it totally fascinates me how much pressure these high school kids have to deal with. And I feel like I would be really interested in watching that.
Yeah.
On Friday nights, you know?
Well, do you worry about how much pressure this would bring to those people? I mean, people always talk about how maybe the age limit in professional sports should be raised because getting these teenagers into a national spotlight with all the scrutiny might be a little too much pressure. Maybe they'd be a little too young for it. I mean, in high school, you're looking at 17-year-olds.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, you've got to look at these people have a lot of pressure on them already. And I don't think throwing on the national, like, and they've sort of got, sports are a very muscle memory thing, especially football. It's like you just sort of drive things in your head, like do this. And I mean, there's going to be, you know, there will be people that will crumble under the pressure, like any sporting event. I don't think it's bad for these kids. I mean, you look at it, like, I think you can pretty confidently say that, say, any high school football team that plays on Fox on a Friday in the fall, it will be literally the best moment of their life. You know, like,
maybe, but yeah. Don't you worry about maybe like TMZ starting to follow these people around after some of their newfound national fame?
No, that won't happen.
I don't know.
At
least at the game.
Yeah.
Some national attention then. Catching them an embarrassing moment like during the game, and now that's even more widespread than it would have been.
Yeah, that'll happen. But I mean, that could happen anytime. It doesn't have to be you see videos of like funny things happening that, you know, 10,000 people aren't, or, you know, a million people aren't watching, but a million people end up watching it.
Yeah,
you know?
True.
So, I mean, that can happen at any time. So.
So that's not a concern for you?
Exactly. Like if I got, if I was doing the Dougie in the middle of the street or something and then got hit by an ice cream truck, you know, like maybe 10 people would see that happen, but someone was videotaping it, so a lot of people saw that happen.
That's
just one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life.
I want to talk a little bit about salary caps because that's kind of something not so much in the past few months, but in the past few years, a term that you've heard a lot.
Yes.
What do you think of salary caps? Is it a good idea? Do you think it should be kind of across the board in all sports? Or do you think some sports need it more or less than others?
I love the idea of salary caps just because it's an even playing field. And that's why I love the hockey hard cap. It's because, like, these people can only spend this much, you know?
And what's the difference between a soft cap and a hard cap?
And I'm pretty sure I'm correct about this, but like hockey teams can only pay up to whatever the salary cap is, like, and they can't pay any more. Whereas basketball and football, you have a salary cap where I know in basketball, the case is that every dollar that you pay your players over the salary cap, you also have to pay a dollar to the league.
Yeah.
So it's like you've got, say, $58 million that you can spend on your players. From everything from $58 million and $1 to the rest of your salary cap, you're paying that to the players and also the exact same amount to the league,
which then gets distributed to the other teams.
I'm not sure how that works, but that sounds correct.
Okay.
Sounds like something that could happen.
So you're effectively, if you decide you want to pay someone $1 million more, you're taking $2 million off your bottom line because you have to
pay
that back to the league.
Exactly. And I mean, the lack of a salary cap is how you see teams like the Yankees and the Red Sox good year after year. It's because they don't, I mean, for one, the Yankees print money. And I mean, the other is that they just can spend more than the Texas Rangers or something, you know? And that's why baseball is in desperate need of a salary cap just so that more teams can win the World Series and stuff.
Yeah.
The hockey hard cap is another reason why Winnipeg will probably be all right. Because when they moved to Phoenix, there wasn't a hard cap. It was pre-lockout. And basically the lockout gave us the hard cap, the last hockey one. And so Winnipeg doesn't have to worry about having to spend or only being able to spend less than the rest of the teams, you know?
Right.
So that'll help. I mean, it's still going to be tough to draw a free agent to Winnipeg, but, you know. I'm very pro the idea of salary caps.
Okay. One thing that I was reading about salary caps, and someone brought up a point that I had never really considered, and it makes a lot of sense. One of the things the salary cap does, it really encourages long-term thinking. So even if you can get, you know, $15 million together to pay someone for a year or two, and it doesn't make sense financially long-term, it prevents this kind of thing where, okay, say we really want this one player, we'll throw all the money we have at him, and, you know, maybe that works for a year or two while he's on the team, but then it didn't make sense. We're running out of money 3 or 4 or 5 years later. The team is out of money, can barely get any good players, and now you have a terrible team, even though maybe you did win a championship or two. And what that does is, when you consider the way people follow sports, most of the time, you know, you've got your team, you know?
Yeah.
So when, you know, your team starts sucking and stops winning games, you either stop following that team or you just go to a different sport altogether, which is obviously really bad for the league.
Yeah.
And that's just something I hadn't really considered because, I just never looked at it in that long-term sense of it. And it just brings up, again, how sports is such a unique product. Like, it's something that, you know, it is still a product that you sell, but in the league's interest, it's about having the best product is the most exciting games, right? Not about making the best team in the league. That's not in the league's interest.
Exactly.
Because as I said, people, you know, my team or, you know, we're playing Detroit this weekend. You know, it's not the Leafs are playing Detroit. We're playing Detroit. Like, it's such a product that you just become a part of, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's just not in the league's interest to have these teams that, you know, are good for a little bit and then fall off because then your fanship falls off as well.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to talk about kind of just small market versus big market teams a little bit too.
Okay.
And it's something that we see in kind of all the major leagues. Hockey is really trying to get into the southern United States. Things like basketball, they're just trying to get into cities or states where basketball isn't as big or has a big professional market, right?
I don't know that basketball is looking to expand.
Oh, okay, but there kind of is a push to get some of those smaller market teams to become better and
less
prominence, right?
Yeah.
What do you think about that? I mean, should they be, not just basketball, but across all sports, should the league be rewarding diehard fans that have been watching the game for, you know, a century, or should they be doing their best to try to get into places, like to take hockey, for example, to get into the southern U.S. so they have a larger market for the entire league? Do you like that idea? Should they be trying to grow it, or should they be rewarding people who are already into it? Because obviously the benefit of expanding is you've got more fans, you get more players, you get better players, and, you know, therefore you have a better game, which is, you know, a better product to sell. But the benefits, you know, might not outweigh all the downfalls of, you know, putting all this money into a place. And we saw it in Phoenix where hockey just didn't take.
Yeah. Well, who knew? I don't know. That's tricky. I don't know that the league should necessarily help a small market team more than they would help another team.
But we do see that a bit, right?
Yeah, but the biggest way you could do that is a salary cap or a hard cap. And, I mean, you can see that with hockey. Hockey has become very fluid in the way players come and go in franchises. Like, has there been a repeat? Like, what was the last team to win 2 cups in a short span of time? It was probably the Devils, early 2000s. And, I mean, that was even pre hard cap. So
yeah.
I feel like Chicago won the cup last year, right? Out in the first round this year, as far as I remember. And it's sort of, it really comes to the hard cap in that teams change so much from year to year, that it really comes back to you are cheering for, you know, the symbol and like maybe one or two players that aren't going to go anywhere. And I mean, like the Bruins aren't going to repeat next year. There's no way because that's the way hockey works now.
Right.
It's so difficult. And I mean, if you looked at the, some of the people that are free agents on their team, they're probably gone, you know, because they're going to deserve a pay raise or want a pay raise because they just won a cup or helped win a cup.
Yeah, and that's money they can make on another team.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think the only way a team or team can really be helped by the league is sort of salary cap or hard cap and stuff like that. Okay. I don't know that the league doing anything else can really. Yeah, I don't know that the league can really do anything else. Because, yeah. I mean, the cap is the only, like, really hard way to help a team.
Right. We've talked about it a little bit in some of our articles, so I don't want to dwell on it too long. But with the LeBron-Miami Heat thing of kind of deciding to have a super team, getting a bunch of superstars together on one team to win a championship,
we can... And, I mean, you saw this in New York by the end of the year as well with Amari Stoudemire and Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah, and actually, this one article that I was reading was saying that people are kind of suggesting maybe Chris Paul might go and join them.
Yeah.
Have a super team there. Dwight Howard, maybe to the Lakers, is one I saw people speculating about, too.
Yeah, Dwight Howard. The Dwight Howard thing's kind of weird.
Yeah.
There is an interesting thing being thrown around that, like, Dwight Howard is Orlando's a good enough market, and, like, LA won't be able to sign him as a free agent next year. So it's sort of, I heard an argument that Orlando should just demand everything they can from the Lakers and then just hope that that Dwight Howard will re-sign because the Lakers just can't sign him, which is the difference with the Knicks. The Knicks would have been able to sign Carmelo this summer when he was a free agent. The Lakers are totally tied up in cap space, and you can't sign an unrestricted free agent to a huge deal if you're already over the cap.
Right. Just to kind of bring it to every other sport, though. Do you think this is a good idea? This whole kind of super team thing? People deciding to have a bunch of superstars on one team? Because it seems obviously bad from a league's perspective to have such a top-heavy league.
I don't agree with that at all. I think it is the best for the league to have a top-heavy league. Because when those teams play, like, it's going to be a big event.
Right.
And the playoffs... like we saw this year, we're pretty crazy and pretty enjoyable. And I think it is in the best interest of the league to have teams like that. I think basketball is the best sport for that because it is the most individual-based sport. Well, I suppose other than baseball, which is a truly individual sport that you happen to play on a team. I don't know how this helps anything in football. I mean, those are always... any team that wins the Super Bowl, you've got to have some sort of really star offensive player. Like in last year's case, you had Aaron Rodgers, great quarterback. Had a bunch of really good defenders, like B.J. Raji, Clay Matthews, A.J. Hawk had been around for a long time, but he'd always been good. And you had Woodson as a corner. And I mean, even on offense, you've got Greg Jennings, Donald Driver. Donald Driver's been around for a long time. Like, Greg Jennings is sort of younger. I know they have a couple other receivers that I just don't remember. And I mean, you have to have a lot of pieces in football. And hockey, it's the same way. Like, you're just playing with bigger teams. And that's why the LeBron type of thing is very basketball based.
Right.
Baseball, you can totally see that, but I mean, you see that pretty much every year with people going to the Yankees. So, like, they're all always joining the super team, you know? So I think it is a fairly basketball thing. And I don't know how it would help with, say, soccer or anything like that.
Right.
I mean, clearly having, Cristiano Ronaldo and Messi would probably on the same team would probably be good.
Yeah. So you just think that it will, I mean, having these really, really great teams play each other, maybe if, you know, there's six great teams and, you know, the rest are pretty bad or, you know, okay to bad, then... those fans of some of the middle ground teams might not watch their teams play as much because they're not as good anymore, but they'll watch two other really good teams go head to head because it's such a great game with such great teams facing off.
If they're interested in the sport, absolutely. Okay. And I mean, there weren't many great teams in the mid 90s, but people remember the mid 90s as a very good time for basketball because that's when Michael Jordan was around. Right. And I mean, the crappy teams are going to fade away anyways and nobody's going to remember them. It's just like and this will be remembered as a pretty interesting year for the playoffs because of all the teams and the rise of some stars like Durant and continuing rise of Durant, the rise of Rose, stuff like that.
Right.
And yeah, I just think it's always in the best interest for any league to have fairly top heavy, because when you come to the playoffs, it's going to be good.
Okay. And you don't think that they'll lose viewers of maybe some of the on the brink of greatness teams who really think that they have a chance at the playoffs all watching, and then maybe they don't make it?
I think in that case, it's only bad for teams, like the specific teams, because I watched fewer Raptors games this year, precisely because the product throughout the league was so good. So I watched more basketball this year than I've ever watched in any season of my life, but I watched less of my team than I've ever watched in my life.
Okay.
So...
okay, makes sense. Kind of just a really fundamental question. How do sports teams make their money?
Merchandise, ticket sales.
Two more I can think of your big revenue streams. Well, this could have been an activity, damn it.
Oh, that's fine. It kind of is still. Merchandising, ticket, concessions. Does that count?
No.
Okay.
Well, it is definitely correct. Yeah. But it's not one of the ones I was thinking of.
Yeah, I don't know. That's, I mean, we could sit here for a while and I could think, but I'm not going
to. TV rights?
Yes, good point.
Well, I guess it's kind of how leagues make their money. And sort of similar to concessions, but in stadium advertising.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
Right. Merchandising, we have video games and all that kind of stuff. I mean... ticket sales, pretty straight up. Pay money at the door.
Yeah.
Goes to the team.
Yep.
Some of it goes to the league. Advertising and kind of TV are some of the trickier ones. Do you just want to do kind of a brief recap of how they get their money from TV? It's kind of like any other television show.
Yeah, like there's sort of, I mean, the league sign contracts with you know, like ESPN or NBC. Like football is Sunday Night Football is on NBC, Monday Night Football is on ESPN. During the, you know, the Sunday afternoon games, you're going to be watching either CBS or Fox. And I mean, these contracts go for a certain amount of time, and then the rights to the show come up for grabs. Like when just before NBC got a hold of Sunday Night Football, there was a deal in place for ESPN to buy both Monday Night and Sunday Night Football, which would have been like a big deal because those are the two biggest shows in football.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting story about how ESPN kind of got screwed by somebody they previously screwed. but I mean, NBC ended up with Sunday Night Football and they have it until, I don't know, 2013 or whenever the deal ends. And this sort of goes with every league. Like the NBA was on NBC for the longest time till like 2002, and then ABC/ESPN, you know, they're both owned by Disney, took over. They signed a long-term deal, and now you'll see NBA on ESPN, and you don't get Bob Costas doing basketball anymore, you know?
Yeah.
He does football.
Yeah. He's talented like that.
Well, look,
who doesn't love Bob Costas?
He is one of the, like, he is totally unflappable. Nobody has anything bad to say about Bob Costas as a personality on television.
Like, and he'll do movies like Basketball and
Pootie Tang,
totally make fun of it, like sports in general, himself, whatever.
Yeah, everybody likes Bob Costas.
Yeah, but I mean, it is, as we've been saying over and over, or as I've been saying redundantly, sports in a lot of ways is a unique product, but when it comes to television rights, it's kind of just like another show.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, the NBC says to themselves, look, we know people watch the NBA, we can expect these kinds of ratings, and then we'll sell the advertising space to advertisers. And it's kind of interesting. It's not like other shows that you can really control. That's kind of another one of the things that makes sports unique. I mean, sure, you can say that maybe the owners and stuff tell the refs to ref things in a certain way, but you kind of just put all the rules in place and then go, right? I mean, sometimes you fine people or suspend them from games, but it's not like a show where you can do focus groups and it's like, oh, everyone seems to really like this character, so more LeBron or whatever. It's kind of, you set everything up and then it's kind of a free-for-all.
To an extent. I think the league regulates and stuff like that a little bit more than leagues in general regulate a little bit more than you sort of said there, but yeah, pretty much generally I agree.
Oh, the advertising, obviously, is a huge revenue stream for them. It's big business to advertise with sports, not just kind of commercials in between games, but in the stadium advertising, too.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, among the major sports, there is kind of a spectrum of how much advertising you have in the games. Not one of the big four, but mixed martial arts, you see advertising everywhere.
Affliction shirts everywhere.
Yeah, but I mean, on the ring of the octagon, the shirts, the shorts, everything people wear, like people hang banners over their corners. I mean, this is all clearly they've received money for this.
Yeah, just a natural progression of what boxing was, basically.
Yeah.
Or has, you know, continues to be.
Yeah. And we don't see that as much in the major sports. Kind of once you get to the major leagues, I mean, advertising's huge. There's definitely more money to be made from advertising in those ones, but you're not seeing as much of, as not as many brands visible when you're watching a game.
Yeah.
You definitely do get away from it. It's still there very much so. I mean, hockey, it's on the boards, but in smaller hockey, I mean, when you watch IIHF and stuff, there's advertisements right on the surface of the ice as well, kind of in every corner and not just on the boards.
That's going to change. As soon as the line crosses from you're going to piss off more people than you won't, then they'll do it. Because if the team gets money from it, then they'll totally be fine with it.
I'm actually surprised we're not seeing more. And maybe just because, you know, advertising is kind of something that interests me a lot. I don't want to say I like it, but it's certainly interesting to me. Just maybe small things on the jerseys. I mean, we see it in soccer already where you'll have one big sponsor and you'll have a little Manchester United crest up here, but you'll have a huge AIG across the jersey, right?
I couldn't tell you what Liverpool's crest looks like, but I know they're sponsored by Carlsberg. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And
every time I see Carlsberg, I think of Liverpool, and every time I see Liverpool, I think of Carlsberg.
And advertising works.
Exactly. No.
And you're right. I think we can't be too far away from this happening. I mean, I'm sure there's a point where someone was like, if they start putting advertisements on the boards in hockey, I'm not going to watch hockey anymore. And, you know,
people will say that, but then they'll still watch hockey.
Oh, of course. It's absurd that anyone's not anybody, but a large group of people aren't going to stop watching. I mean, there's already little Nike swooshes or Reebok symbols on the jerseys if that's who makes them, but I'm not going to be surprised if, you know, we get an advertisement on their sleeve or on their jersey.
Well, and I mean, the name on the back of the jersey is an advertisement in itself as well, right?
Yeah, true.
And the jersey itself is an advertisement for its jersey.
For merchandising, yeah. So how far away do you think we are from things like that? I mean, we usually have, right now, in the big four sports, basketball, we usually get like American Airlines Arena on the court, some advertisements on those kind of boards, things that are around. Raptors.com on the top of the backboard, so when they use that camera above the net. Hockey, really just the boards. Baseball, not that much, really.
Yeah, well, baseball will be the last to incorporate these things, I think, because baseball has always been the last to accept new technology. Like, it's the least modern of the sports.
Do you think we're going to start seeing that in football, too? Maybe advertisements right on the field?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it can't be too, like, how far off do you think we're looking at some of these changes in the big sports?
I don't know. Things like this are tough to predict because it totally depends on how quickly culture moves towards accepting even more advertisements than we already have.
Yeah.
And I mean, guessing the speed of things in culture right now, no. So I'll just say 5 years, totally arbitrarily.
Okay. And do you think we're going to see it on the playing surfaces before we see it on the jerseys? Or do you think they're kind of going to come around at the same time?
Well, what will happen is one team will do something on the playing surface. They'll do it for one season, see how that goes. If it does fine, they'll keep doing it. Either the next season or the season after, they'll put a little thing on the jersey.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it'll be a slow integration, but it'll happen for sure.
Yeah. It does kind of suck about having soccer jerseys that it's such a huge logo on it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're wearing a jersey in general, you are wearing advertisements. Well, I mean, you could say that about any clothing, but
yeah.
You know,
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You're advertising a product either way.
Yeah. Do you know about Barcelona's longstanding record of not having anything on? So nope. they were one of the like last teams to put a logo on their jersey. Not a corporate logo. Actually, I guess it wasn't even a corporate logo. They had nothing for the longest time. They had their striped jersey with the little crest. And now they have UNICEF. Yeah. And it's just kind of to raise awareness for UNICEF.
Yeah.
Go Barcelona.
Yeah.
Another reason to love you, other than employing a donkey.
Is he still there?
I don't know.
I feel like he's moved around.
Okay. I saw an interesting thing in an interesting article about sports advertising in sports video games. And it was an article someone had looked at the actual layout of baseball stadiums in reality, in meat space. And the layout of stadiums in video games and what they've been doing, and there's some good comparisons. They've been adding more walls in like Wrigley Field and adding more surfaces to stadiums to put more advertisements in there.
Okay.
And I thought that was interesting. They're just kind of tweaking reality a bit to fit more advertising space in. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. Well, I actually, in undergrad, I wrote a paper on how, like, I love NBA 2K, you know, whatever game of the year it is, and how the whole thing is just an advertisement, and for everything. It's for advertisement for the players themselves, for the league. It's for the actual advertisements like Gatorade that are in the game.
Yeah.
It's for the commentary team that calls, like, and all it does is, I mean, I get to simulate basketball, and the trade-off is I'm bombarded with advertisements every time I play the game. And that's how it is with every sports game.
Yeah. And what I find interesting about that is, to a point, it's really just simulating watching a game more. I mean, if you watch a game and there's all these advertisements, and then you play the game and there's no advertisements, it's kind of inauthentic in a way. It's like, this isn't as much of the real experience, because that should have been a Gatorade timeout, and it was just the timeout, you know?
It increases authenticity, absolutely. I was never complaining about it. It's just that I pay $80 a year for this piece of advertisement, and it's just very, very elaborate advertisement that I love playing. You know?
Yeah.
So it's just something that's been interesting about sports video games for me.
Yeah, it's just up to a point. I mean, it's authentic, and you're kind of, it's just further immersing yourself in what it would be like to actually be playing a game that, or to actually be controlling the sports that you watch on TV.
Yeah.
And then it kind of crosses a line to the thing I was saying about them changing the stadium, where it's even more advertising than what you get on television.
Yep.
Another, speaking of stadium advertisements, just the names of stadiums, so many now, there's very few left that aren't a corporate sponsor, right?
Exactly.
Like, it was the Skydome for the longest time, and now it's the Rogers Center.
Yep.
Do you have any particular favorite arena names or particular least favorite arena names?
I've always kind of liked the Alamo Dome.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's actually still called that, but it's kind of how it gets referred.
Yeah. And I mean, you have things like the Shark Tank and all that stuff, and then very quickly they change because people in sports media are legally required to refer to it as their names, or else it's a breach of contract of what they're doing, right? So, I mean, you can still say Skydome to people on the street, but you just don't hear it on television because of all the contracts they've signed saying, look, if that's the corporate sponsor, that is absolutely what you must call it at all times.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really get... I don't think about what stadium names I like, I suppose.
Okay.
I enjoy the layout of some stadiums more than the layout of others, you know?
Right.
Like, I enjoy watching a game on television in Madison Square Garden better than I like whatever Cleveland's Gund Arena, or it was Gund, now it's something, whatever.
Cleveland, the Cavs?
Yeah.
Quicken Loans?
Yes, that's it. And just because of where you can put the cameras for the broadcast, like the Cleveland Stadium is really weird in that the cameras had to be lower and closer to the action just a little bit than most other stadiums. But it's weird, and I never like the angle you get.
Oh, there. Okay.
But yeah, that's, you know.
Okay, but any that you particularly hate?
No.
See, I don't like something about Quicken Loans. It sounds so cheap. Like, I know it's a loan company. Probably the guy's last name is Quicken, but it sounds like Quick Loans, like this really cheap, like budget fly-by-night loan place.
They call it the Q, which is better than pretty much any.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, something that was not talked about during the NBA Finals that I feel like should have been mentioned at some point was the fact that every game of the finals took place in either the American Airlines Arena or the American Airlines Center.
Yeah.
You know, like,
I thought that was so funny.
Yeah. And nobody mentioned it. I was like, this is funny. This is the, like, why aren't we advertising this like the Subway Series? You know, like when the Mets and Yankees play. Why aren't we calling this the American Airlines Series?
American Airlines would love it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, why didn't they talk to the league? They're dropping the ball.
Yeah, because the Heat and the Mavericks both played in stadiums sponsored by American Airlines. Yeah. That's, no, I thought that was really funny, too. I did put together a list of some of my favorite stadium names.
Okay.
Because they're really bad. I guess my least favorite stadium names. Yeah. One in England right now is the sportsdirect.com at St. James Park.
Nice.
Yeah.
Rolls off the tongue.
I thought so. It's interesting. Actually, I think the owner, somebody involved with the team that plays there, owns sportsdirect.com. And they didn't actually pay for this, but since he owns it, he did this just to advertise the fact that someone can buy this now.
Yep.
So he's just kind of saying, hey, if you hate the name of this, like, buy it. Okay. Do something better with it. There's an interesting one in Boston called the Shamit Center.
Okay.
Which is sounds terrible, right?
It sounds like a place of prayer. You know?
It just sounds like just a weird word. But it's really funny because it's the bank. And when they were doing the naming rights, Shamit and this bank called Fleet Bank had a bidding war over who gets to name it. So it could have been like the Fleet Center or the Fleet Bank Center or the Shamit Center. And so they were outbidding each other back and forth, and eventually Shamit won it. But at the same time, and I guess not great communication within the company here, they're also discussing a merger between these two companies. So just after it got named, they merged.
Yeah.
So they had been essentially bidding their own company to raise the amount that the naming rights were for. And so they decided that it would be the Fleet Center. And so they had to, like, change the whole color design, get, like, new seats and all this stuff, and change everything in the stadium really quickly. I thought that was funny and embarrassing. There's jobbing.com center in Arizona. And you know the term jobbing and how it relates to sports. It usually means
the Mavericks got jobbed by the refs in the 2006 finals.
Yeah, just about like referee corruption and not fair play, which is a great name. The Nashville Predators for a while played in the Gaylord Entertainment Center.
Okay.
Don't really need to address why that's a bad name.
Yeah.
Snickers. And my absolute favorite one at the University of San Diego, where there's...
Is it the Norv Turner Stadium? Can I name something after Norv?
I wish. No, it's where they play men's and women's basketball and volleyball is the Jenny Craig Pavilion.
Nice.
Which is, come to down to the Jenny Craig Pavilion and prove it, you know? Colloquially known by the students as the Slim Jim.
Nice.
Which I enjoyed a lot as well. So not just for the leagues, but sports is a big business, kind of all the ancillary industries that come out of it, like, you know, bars and restaurants and stuff really benefit from sports going on because so many people like to go out and watch sports. Gambling.
Yep.
Huge. Sports gambling is huge now. Internet gambling. I mean, there is government or state-sponsored gambling as well, but you can see a lot. Ever since the internet, there's been way, way more gambling, and there's also just kind of, you know, illegal off-the-books gambling happening. And that is literally billions of dollars a year.
Yeah.
That's a huge industry. There's a reason why the government got involved in it.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of money to be made there. Just to go back to the bars and restaurants, obviously they see a huge boost during playoffs because so many people like to go out and eat and drink and watch the games. This year... well, I guess every year, the NBA playoffs and the NHL playoffs happen concurrently. So
pretty well, yeah.
Yeah, we had, you know, Monday night would be basketball, and then Tuesday night would be hockey, Wednesday night basketball again, and it goes back and forth like that. Are you surprised that those happened at the same time? Does that make sense to you?
I mean, it makes sense because it's always been that way. I mean, I don't really put a lot of thought into it because I only really care about one of those sports.
Right. Do you think if you did care a lot about hockey, you'd want them to happen at different times?
No, because I can only care so much about so many sports, and I put a lot of thought into basketball and football. And I mean, if I can't see myself following two 82 game seasons really closely,
right?
You know, so I feel like it would just be one or the other. And I mean, at some point, you just sort of have to take, you know, make a choice. Like I can't follow everything.
Yeah. Well, I see what you mean, but when they're at the same time, I find it's even harder to follow. And I know people who are big hockey fans and big basketball fans, and not just for the bars and restaurants that would benefit greatly from this, but wouldn't the leagues stand to benefit a lot by having playoffs separately? Because as you said, you can't just keep up with everything. People can't go out to a bar for, you know, well, some people can, but most people can't go out to a bar 6 days a week to watch these sports. And at the same time, maybe people just don't have the energy to get really into six playoff games a week. Wouldn't we see viewership rise for both playoffs if we separated them?
In theory, but the fact that you would separate them would really decrease your audience, and that you're changing something that has been this way for a long time. And say what you would have to do is move one of those leagues into a different time. And the NBA would not benefit at all from moving to the summer, because the NBA is the bigger league than the two. Like, it makes more, well, I guess it doesn't make more money, but it has higher clout worldwide than the NHL for sure. And nobody in Canada would be receptive to hockey moving to the summer, which is the only place that cares about the NHL. Right. So, I mean, it's in theory, it would work. In practice, it would not. You know what I mean? In theory, it makes sense. In practice, it wouldn't work.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
I just think it would just, you would lose so much of the audience. And I mean, hockey can't be messing around with trying to lose their audience, and that they're just starting to build it back.
Yeah. You know? Well, it seems to me that, I mean, just the way that you said people aren't going to stop watching a sport because there's a little bit more advertisement. Do you think people are going to stop watching hockey just because the playoffs are in a different month now?
Well, you look at the advertising. Advertising doesn't change the way you watch a game. Advertising is present in the same way you've always watched the game, in the same time. Whereas you're kind of, I'm used to not having a life from like April 15th to June 15th, you know? Like, I'm kind of used to those 2 months being months where not a lot happens in my personal life because I'm watching the NBA playoffs. And I'm sure there are hockey fans that are the same way with hockey. But I mean, to change that, I can't say, but I mean, you probably wouldn't lose me. You'd lose somebody.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
And there would probably be a lot more somebodies than there would be me, you know? Like, there are a lot more people that are casual NBA fans than there are people that watched literally every game of this year's playoffs. You know?
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense. One last question, which you might cut because it seems kind of nice to end on the playoffs thing. So that makes sense. From a purely financial standpoint, does it make sense for leagues to just stop caring about steroid use and just totally embrace it? Just because it's, I mean, we saw what happened with the home run derby. Now, some people say that, well, not the home run derby, but
was a home run derby of sorts.
It kind of was. Yeah. But the home run race between Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa was amazing for the MLB. So many more people are watching games because they wanted to see if those guys were going to hit one, if they're going to break the record, how many they were going to hit. Isn't it just more home runs, which people love to see, faster players, bigger hits?
They're not faster. I mean, the reason baseball scoring has gone down in, I mean, unsurprisingly, because steroid crackdown has gone down over the past, you know, number of years, precisely because people aren't hitting as many home runs as they used to. Another side effect of steroids is that it kind of makes you, like, it sort of makes you a little slower. And I mean, there's an argument to be made, I don't know if anybody has made it, but I sort of think this is that players have gotten better defensively because they're not taking steroids anymore. Okay. Because they can get ground balls quicker and stuff like that. And it's a small difference, but since we're in professional sports, the small things are what matter, like these little half seconds and stuff like that.
For sure.
The big home runs have gone away, but defense has also gotten better. And I think that has sort of changed the game as well. And there will always be sort of ups and downs for a league in how the game is played. Like it was very team oriented in the mid 80s was the NBA. You know, you've got the Lakers, which were very much a team, and the Celtics, which were very much a team. They did a lot of, you know, passing. And I mean, you had Showtime Lakers, and Larry Bird's well known for his passing. Bill Walton, probably the best passing center of all time, was on the team in 86. And stuff like that. Whereas when Jordan came in, it sort of moved into an individual thing, which really sort of was the whole 90s, and sort of has started to fade away into teams. And that sort of started with the Celtics. It's continuing with the Heat. The Heat kind of learned that they need to learn how to work as a team, Wade and LeBron. And that's why the Pierce, Allen, Garnett thing worked so well, is because they complement each other. And now we're sort of seeing a move towards team as opposed to individual in the NBA again. Like Russell Westbrook, the general thought is that the Thunder need to figure out how to use both Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant at the same time, as opposed to one of them just dominating the ball for a period of time. And that's sort of, I mean, we'll come back, we'll have a true, like an unbelievable individual who stands head and shoulders above everybody else again. That'll happen. It might not be Michael Jordan type of player, but there will be a time when the league isn't as good, just like it wasn't after Jordan until the 2003 draft, when LeBron and Wade and Bosch and all those guys came into the league, Carmelo. And that was really a big deal because it sort of had a huge injection of talent. And leagues like that will always sort of go up and down. So I don't think that that leagues should turn away from steroids. I mean, we saw what happened, public perception, when Bud Selig essentially did do that. Yeah. And I mean, baseball is still kind of hurt from it, in that anytime somebody happens to be on a hot streak, they're like, oh, steroids, you know, he's cycling now, you know?
Yeah.
And I think the good thing about sports is that these are highly trained athletes, and the fact that we're seeing them do incredible things that we couldn't do is the good thing about sports. I mean, there will be more steroid scandals, and they'll always piss people off, you know. Like even Rashard Lewis, a player on the team, the Magic, that went to the finals in 2008, he found out like he was using like some small steroid and got banned for 10 games. And that was, you know, an NBA. You don't get as many steroid things in the NBA, but I think there will be a big one at some point. And the fact that adding steroids into the sports, like I said, the reason we like them is because it's people, natural people doing incredible things. If you put steroids into the mix, then it's sort of like, oh, I could do that if I had as many steroids in me as you did.
Oh, okay.
You know, I just think it's a really bad idea.
Cool. Anything else you want to say about the business side of sports?
No, I think I've said enough.
Cool. Yeah. Well, what we learned today was, if anybody is looking to get rid of a sports team, please donate it to me and not Alex, because his stress levels can't handle it.
That's right. I get stressed out. I'd be better off owning Burger King.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks a lot for listening. The part 3 will be coming. We're not sure when, but not the week after you listen to this one.
Yeah, exactly. We got to give the movie fans something, you know?
Right. And that one, like I said, is going to be about cultural phenomenon of sports. So if the business kind of stuff wasn't so interesting to you, I think the cultural stuff will be more up your alley. So keep your ears open for that.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the MacGuffin Men.
This episode has been brought to you by American Flags in Movies. We don't need wind to wave. We just need to be looked at by a true patriot.
Be sure to check out themacguffinmen.com for supplementary links, articles, and more. Thanks for listening.